Hello, and welcome to Hope Church. We're a local church with chill style, real faith, and no perfect people allowed. Thanks for checking out our podcast. This is a message from our Soquel location in the Santa Cruz, California area. We hope this message is encouraging. If you live near either of our locations, we'd love to have you join us for one of our many Sunday services.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Hope Church Online. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thanks for inviting us into your living room or whatever space you're watching us in. We just really appreciate the privilege that it is to share this time and this space with you. And this morning, I'm really excited because we're kicking off a brand new series. This series is called Why I Still Believe. I couldn't be more excited about it. This is my excited face, all right? So I'm kicking it off this week, and then the following week, we have our very own Tim Coleman. And then the week after that, we have a very special guest. Our friend Dan Kimball from Vintage Faith across town is going to be sharing with us as well. So really exciting stuff coming up. And we're all going to be talking about and defending this idea that we find belief in the person of Jesus to be compelling. So if you've been with us the last few weeks, you know that we've been in this, we finished up last week a series called Pathways. And we also finished up, or are finishing up today on Sunday, a 21-day fast. So how's that been going for you? You know, if you're at home right now and you want to talk about that in the comments, just say, hey, maybe just mention something that the Lord showed you in the last 21 days during this fast. I know for us and our family, it's been pretty special. My two sons, Andrew and Ben, they fasted for 7 days from treats and like sweet snacks and things like that. And on the seventh day, when they got to break their fast, they came to me in the morning, like 7 in the morning, Dad, can we go downstairs and eat a... They really like these power bars, these Clif Bar power bars. They have just a little drizzle of frosting on them. I said, yeah, boys, go ahead. Go ahead on. So they went downstairs, and I came down later and said, boys, how was it? How were your power bars? And my son Ben said, Dad, we sat in the dining room. We ate our power bars. It was like there was an angel in the room with us. I don't know what that means. It sounded kind of crazy, but anyway, the fast has been really special for our family, and we've really enjoyed it. I hope you have too. So we're kicking off this series, Why I Still Believe. I'm going to start by making a statement. I'm going to make a statement, and then I'm going to defend that statement as being not only rational, but transformational. Because something can be true and rational and reasonable to believe, but that doesn't mean it really has any effect on your life. But this statement is both. So here's the statement. You ready? This is it. I still believe that there is a God, and that he has revealed himself to us through the teachings and the person of Jesus. Do you believe that? I believe that. If you believe that, why do you believe that? Maybe stop and think about that for a minute. Why do you believe that's true, if indeed you do? You know, Russell Brand, the famous atheist and philosopher from the last century, he wrote a very well-known essay entitled, Why I Am Not a Christian. It really shook academia when he published it in 1927. And he outlines several very compelling reasons for why he is not a Christian. So if Russell Brand has good reasons not to be a Christian, then what do we have? What do we have exactly? Well, the first thing that we have is we have a charge, an exhortation from the Apostle Peter. So let's take a look at 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. This is kind of our core text for this series, and I'm going to read it right here. This is 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, if you're reading along. So Peter is speaking to the early church, these early followers of Jesus, but he's also speaking down through the ages to you and to me. And this is what he says, "But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience, so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander." So, in other words, have a good reason, be able to defend the hope that you have in Christ, but do it in a way that is not offensive and doesn't give good reason for people to say bad things about you and your behavior. You know, that phrase in English there, give the reason, is translated from a single Greek word, and this word is apologian. Apologian, which is where we get the word apologetics. Apologetics is kind of a high-fluting sounding Christian word that just means to be able to give reasoned arguments, to give good justification for the belief of something. And that's what we're going to be talking about. So today I'm going to share with you some parts of my story from my life, and I'm going to share them alongside some parts of the story of Thomas, the apostle. His story is found in the Gospel of John. So if you have a paper Bible and you want to open it, you might want to open to the Gospel of John. That's where we're going to be today. When I was 5 years old, I came to believe that there was a God. And I came to believe that this God revealed himself through the person of Jesus. And I came to believe that it was only through a belief in this Jesus that I could be saved. Now, the reason I came to believe these things is because my mother told me they were true. And she told me a story. This is how it went. This is the story. There is darkness in this world. And that made sense to me because at 5 years old, I was terrified of the dark. I hated going down the hall from the connected our living room to the bedroom by myself because it was a dark hallway, and I hated the dark. I was terrified of it. But she told me this story. There is darkness in the world, and it's not unreasonable to be frightened of darkness. But God loved me and wanted to save me from that darkness. You could say that I was persuaded by a good story and propelled to belief because of my emotional reaction, but also my connection to the person telling the story. And because it seemed to resonate in my spirit. Now, in the faith community, we talk about spirit. In the secular community, they talk about consciousness. You know, if you think about who you are, who are you? Are you this? No, we know that there's something else that defines who we are. And whether it's consciousness or you call it spirit, it's who you are inside. And in the faith community, we know that there's moments where our spirit, it resonates like think of a guitar string that's tuned to a particular frequency. And when you hear truth, it resonates in your spirit, if you're sensitive to know it. I was enamored with this idea that God could love me with such a great big love that I felt the only reasonable, the only responsible, rational response to that was to pledge my life in service to a God that could love me that big. Now, some people describe their salvation experience as a moment where they invited Jesus to come and live in their heart. In fact, many of you might describe your salvation experience, if you've had one, that way. I invited Jesus to live in my heart. To me, it seemed more like I was offering my heart to Jesus, offering my whole life, in fact, to him. Okay, let's jump over to the story of Thomas. So Thomas is a character in the Gospels. He's mentioned in the Synoptic Gospels by name, but in John, he actually has some speaking parts and a story that's told about him, and he gets kind of a bad rap. So Thomas has a nickname, and his nickname kind of describes our perception of his behavior. If you know what that nickname is, it's Thomas. It's something Thomas, right? Then type it in the notes. See who can be the first in the comments to name Thomas's nickname in the Gospels. So we're picking up in John chapter 11, right? And in this story, Lazarus, Jesus' very close personal friend, had just died. And he was hearing the news about it for the first time. And so this is where we pick up in John chapter 11. This is verse 7. Jesus had heard about the death of his friend Lazarus and wanted to return back home to see Mary. And he said to his disciples, "Let's go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago, the Jews there, they tried to stone you. They tried to murder Jesus. And yet you are going back?" And then they proceed to try to talk him out of it in this conversation that takes place. And jumping ahead to verse 16, here's what Thomas says. It said, "Thomas said to the rest of the disciples, 'Let us also go that we may die with him.'" Thomas was ready. He was all in. All his chips were pushed into the pot in the middle. He was ready to go. I mean, many people would call this man an extremist. I mean, he was ready to enter into this suicide pact. Let's go to Judea. We'll just all die together, right? This sounds to me like someone who had heard a good story, who'd been persuaded by that story, who maybe had an emotional connection to the person telling the story. Perhaps that story had inspired him and it resonated in his spirit, maybe. In fact, so much so that he was willing to give his life for the cause. So here's the deal. Psychology tells us that there's two ways to arrive at a belief. You have beliefs. I have a belief. I have beliefs. And we've arrived at those beliefs through two avenues. One is we have an experience and we deduce from the evidence of that experience. And through reason and logic, we decide something is true. Let's say you walk in your kitchen. You see there's crumbs all over the counter. You say, based on the evidence, someone made a peanut butter sandwich here today. That's the reason one that you might arrive at a belief. Reason two is by accepting what someone tells us is true. Just like I believed my mother in my childhood, my story that she told me that was true. Now, the second one relies heavily on how we feel about the person and the circumstance and maybe the context that they're speaking from. And it plays on how we feel about those things. You know, when I was a kid, if you haven't grown up here, you probably don't know this, but there used to be this store called Kiddyland. It was like a Toys R Us on crack. I mean, it's just this massive store. Every toy you could imagine, books, games, I mean, action figures, Legos, the whole nine yards. And it was in the shopping center right down the street, the Nob Hill Shopping Center that's still there today. And I was so excited to go to Kiddyland when I was a kid. Every Saturday I'd go, Mom and Dad, can we go to Kiddyland? We don't have to buy anything. I just want to look around and just pace the aisles and look at all the colorful toys. I was so excited about it. And every once in a while we'd go, and it was just this huge thrill of my life. One day, Kiddyland closed. They closed the whole store down. And to this day, sometimes when I drive into that shopping center that has a Nob Hill and a Pete's Coffee and drugstore, even though Kiddyland has been gone for decades, I still get a tiny little thrill in my stomach, like there's something exciting there, even though I know there's nothing there. That tells me that our feelings can sometimes be unreliable, even though they're sometimes a good way to start with a belief or lead us to a belief. It's not a great anchor for our beliefs. Jesus might have been alluding to this when he talked about building your house on the sand or building your house on a rocky foundation. What are your beliefs built upon when you think about it? So jumping ahead a little bit, when I was 8 years old, I suffered my first existential crisis. It wasn't my last, but it was my first, and it was a big one. I totally blame my cousin Brian McCabe for introducing me to a love of space, all things space, astronauts, planets, stars, nebula, but especially cosmology. Cosmology is the origin and evolution of the universe. Where did it all come from? That's cosmology. And I loved it. I had stacks of books and magazines, and I loved the space Legos. Remember when Legos had three themes? It was like town, castle, space. I loved the space Legos. I'd build up these fantastic spaceships and just dream. I wanted to be an astronaut and see the universe. I found out from some of these books that the universe was 14 billion years old. 14 billion years. That got me thinking about God. How old is he? How long has he been around? Has he been around that whole time? So, you know, about 8 years old, I asked a church leader, how old is God? And she laughed and she said, God has no beginning and no end. And I thought, well, that doesn't sound right. I challenged this. I said, how could you have no beginning? I had no problem with the no end thing. That's way in the future. You know, how can you prove or disprove that? But the no beginning thing really bothered me. And she said, this is what her answer was. She said, God is infinite. And I went home and thought about that. And this was a huge problem for me. I didn't like that answer at all. I struggled with this. How could someone be infinite? How could anyone be infinite? Trillions upon trillions upon trillions of years into the past, and you're still not done counting. It makes no sense. I just agonized over it from the ages of about 8 to 10, maybe 8 to 11. I just wrestled with this. And this thing that I was wrestling with in philosophy, it's called, I didn't have the vocabulary for it at the time, but in philosophy, it's called the problem of infinite regress. That means that nothing can be infinite in the past. Think about it. If the past was infinite, you'd never arrive at today. You could never get here. So infinite is a made up word. It means nothing. And this bothered me in my soul. Have you ever had a brain splinter? This is what I call a brain splinter, is a problem, an idea in your head that you can't reconcile. And I would think about it all the time. And I questioned, was the story that I committed myself to, is it a lie? Is it not true? I just want to encourage you, some of you right now, that if you have doubts, doubt is a very reasonable component of belief. If you have belief, oftentimes we have doubts and they can cohabitate together. That doesn't mean that something's wrong with you. It just means that you have a mind that works the way it's supposed to. When I would go to church and I would hear things about God and the world and about people, I'd look around and I see that people just believed. And it just didn't come easy for me the way it did for some people. My brain splinters were starting to stack up. And with crisis often comes a lie. Here's the lie that was whispered in the back of my head. This might sound familiar to some of you. Perhaps it's different for others. This is the lie that I heard as I pondered and wrestled with this brain splinter. This is the lie that I heard. There is something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you. That's what I heard. Now, a lie is really only as dangerous as the false conclusions that it inspires. And here's some false conclusions that it inspired in my thinking. You will never be special. You will always be alone. You are unworthy of love. I knew that I loved God and was emotionally drawn to the story and the teachings of Jesus, but I did not find myself worthy of his love. And I questioned the narrative that he could be all loving if he didn't perhaps love me. But I'm a problem solver, so I worked the problem. I asked questions and I didn't give up. I read scripture and I looked for answers. And one day I found one. I read about black holes and I read about how they stretch the fabric of time and that space and time are actually connected. They're one thing. And that time itself came into being with the beginning of the universe and the Big Bang 13.7 billion years ago. And it finally struck me. This idea came to my mind. God is not infinite. God is eternal. He exists apart from his creation. Later, I would discover the theological and philosophical contention called the Kalam cosmological argument. And here's how it goes. I know this sounds pretty lofty. You don't have to write it down or remember it. I just want to speak it over you. It goes like this. There's 3 points. One, whatever begins to exist has a cause. And two, the universe began to exist. Think about it. Look around your room, wherever you are right now. Find an object and look at that object. Did it begin to exist? Of course it did. Did it have a cause? Of course it did. You would be hard-pressed to find an object anywhere in the universe that didn't begin and didn't have a cause. So everything that began to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe has a cause. And if the universe has a cause, this cause would be timeless and spaceless and immaterial and enormously powerful and personal. Years later, in my early teens, one day my family got up in the morning, we decided to go to a brand new church. It was a church that happened to meet in the building that I'm standing in right now. Back then, it was a church called Lighthouse. And when I walked in the church doors for the first time, I looked on the back wall, and there was a banner on the back wall, and it said this, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. That's Hebrews 13:18. Timeless, spaceless, immaterial, powerful, and personal. Let's jump back to Thomas and check in with him for a minute, shall we? This is John chapter 14. So Jesus is having a conversation with some of his friends, and Thomas is there. And here's what Jesus says. He says, if I go prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going. And Thomas said to him, Lord, we don't know where you're going. How can we know the way? I am the way and the truth and the life. Jesus says, no one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and you have seen him. See, Thomas was a problem solver like me. He didn't want to be left behind. He simply wanted some good directions where his friend Jesus was going. Truth seeking, let me tell you this, truth seeking is nothing to be ashamed of. You should seek truth. We should seek truth. In fact, this honest seeking on Thomas' part is probably what inspired Jesus to reveal this incredible and direct piece of information about himself and his character. And it took me years to embrace this truth, this idea that there is nothing fundamentally wrong with me because God made me the way I am. Now, let me be clear. The important word in that is fundamentally. There's a bunch of stuff wrong with me, but it's stuff that I've done to myself. It's choices I've made or others have made around me that have affected me. And that's all stuff that God can fix. And he is fixing. He's working on me. He never gives up on me. He's always doing something in my life. But the basic design for who I am and for who you are is a good one. He made you the way he made you, with a purpose. Years after I walked through the doors of that church, I found myself in a church community that was healthy and loving and surrounded by friends and mentors, and I had this dream that I would serve in this little corner of the kingdom and raise my children around these people and that loved me and my wife Amy and that made us feel safe and cared for. It wasn't a big dream, but it was my dream. It was the one that I had. And that dream unraveled. It fell apart because the church we were in fell apart. And that happens sometimes, and it's painful. It fell apart because of human choices and natural circumstances. And it can be so painful when your vision for your future just falls apart and becomes wreckage in front of you. When your heart is wounded on that level, it makes it so that you don't want to dream of a future because the thought of it being taken away is too painful. Let's jump over to Thomas one last time and check in with him. So This is the point in the story. This is John chapter 20, where Jesus had died. He'd been murdered on a cross, crucified before all of his friends, and his friends were devastated. This is not how they thought things were going to end up. Jesus had been taken from them. But 3 days later, he appeared, first to some women and then to the rest of his friends. But Thomas was away when it happened. So Thomas comes back and he meets with his friends. Here's what they tell him. It says, the other disciples, this is verse 25, the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." And he said to them, he said, "Don't do that." He says, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, unless I can put my finger where the nails were, unless I can put my hand in his side, I will not believe." That word belief there is a Greek word, pistos. It means to be persuaded. I will not be persuaded by that. I need to see. Everything's been ripped apart for Thomas. Everything's been taken away. His vision for the future has been dashed. And it's not enough for someone to just tell him there's hope. He needs to see the hope. The scripture goes on to say, a week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them all of a sudden and said, "Peace be with you." Can we just stop for a minute and acknowledge how insane that would be if you were in a room with a bunch of friends and you had a friend that died, and then all of a sudden he was just there in your midst and he said, "Peace be with you." I mean, one of those guys had to go pee in his robe just a little bit. I mean, that probably happened, right? It's, oh my gosh, right? I'm sure it happened. Maybe it was Thomas. So he says, "Peace be with you." And then he turns to Thomas. Thomas is the first one he speaks to, right? What did he say to Thomas here? What did he say to Thomas, who had refused to be persuaded? What did he say? Did he say, "Shame on you, Thomas. Shame on you, you doubter"? Did he say, "There must be something wrong with you to have a head full of brain splinters like you do"? No. He turned to Thomas and he said, he invited him, "Put your finger here. See my hands? See the wounds? Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Stop doubting and believe." That word doubting and the word believe are the same word. It's pistis. Doubting is just the negative particle version of it, which is you can stop unbelieving now and now believe. And Thomas replied, "My Lord and my God." And he had a vision for his future again. In that moment, it was restored. Jesus did not deny Thomas the thing that he knew he needed to be persuaded. Jesus affirms Thomas because he had made him that way. He designed him from the ground up to be a truth seeker like you and like me. You know, over 40 years later, Thomas was murdered for preaching the gospel of Jesus. He had made it all the way to the southern tip of India. He planted churches all along the way. He went farther geographically than any other apostle. He spent his last days planting churches and telling everyone who would hear about this God who had saved him from the darkness. The reason I still believe, friends, is this. It is the most reasonable belief to have that if the universe had a beginning, then it has a cause. If it has a cause, then that cause exists outside of it and apart from it and is enormously powerful and personal. It's personal because he chose to begin the universe, just like he chose to put you and me in it. If this God is personal, then he made human beings to know him and be known by him. And if he wanted us to know him, then it seems incredibly reasonable that he would reveal himself to us through the vehicle of a person. And there's no better example, friends, than this Jesus. Of all the religious figures in history, he is the most selfless, the most loving, the most radical, the most compelling, and the only one who predicted his own death and then rose from the dead and appeared to over 200 eyewitnesses. Many of those would go on to be murdered for refusing to deny this claim on pain of death. I still believe because when I was offered this Jesus, when I offered him my heart, he did not reject me. He embraced me and affirmed me and gave me a purpose, but he didn't stop there. He gave me a reason to go on living and he taught me how to live. But he didn't stop there. He scattered throughout his good universe black holes and sunflowers and music and rainbows and chocolate to remind people like me that he is a God who opens doors, not one who closes them. His invitation is broad and his intentions are clear. His love is bigger than we can ever know. I still believe that there is a God, and He has revealed Himself through the person and the teachings of Jesus, because He loves me, and He never, ever, ever gave up on me.
We hope this message encouraged you to take the next steps in your relationship with God. The cool thing is that you don't have to do it alone. There are a lot of ways you can get connected to your hope. Not only do we want you to feel at home at Hope, we'd love to help you find a home. Please check out discoverhope.church and click connect, or just email us at info@discoverhope.church. Lastly, we give everything we can away for free and rely 100% on volunteers and donations to support this ministry. If you'd like to give to the mission of Hope Church, you can select the give option on our website or text any amount to 831-800-2060. Thanks again for tuning in.